Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The first case for argument this morning is Lucas against Pyramid Bank. Mr. LaPointe.
Good morning. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Martin LaPointe. I'm the attorney for the appellant, Geraldine Lucas. This case comes to this court on appeal of the district court's summary judgment order dismissing all of Ms. Lucas's claims, the ERISA retaliation, FMLA, retaliation in violation of Title VII, and gender discrimination as well. For the reasons stated in our briefs and in oral argument today, the record contains overwhelming evidence of pretext, and for these reasons, we believe that the district court order was an error.
Could I just real quick ask you something? Why did she, Ms. Lucas, withdraw from Pyramax's insurance plan? In other words, wasn't her need for benefits the only reason she agreed to take that BEO trainee position to begin with?
Judge Rovner, that exactly was the reason why she continued on with the bank. That was one of the reasons, of course. She wanted to regain her position, of course, as well. But on top of that, Ms. Lucas decided not to continue the medical insurance plan at that point in time because her husband had just recently switched jobs, and he became eligible for his medical benefits. But she knew full well that she could opt back into the medical plan at any point in time. So.
Thanks.
The evidence of pretext, again, as I mentioned, we believe is overwhelming. There are two conclusive points of evidence that are completely unrefuted here. Number one is the defendant themselves has provided conflicting reasons for its actions. In her affidavit, Karen Murphy has stated under oath that Lucas's behavior was the root cause of what she believed to be an impending mass exodus of employees. Behavior is the word that she used.
Well, now, weren't there two reasons, behavior versus her lack of operations knowledge?
Well, the operations knowledge, Your Honor, was mentioned in the termination documentation later on in December. But that, again, conflicted with the reason given by Ms. Murphy in her affidavit.
But why, I mean, instead of being contradictory, it seems that those two reasons would plausibly go hand in hand. In other words, her limited operation knowledge, her alleged limited operation knowledge would contribute to her inability to assist and interact with the customer service representatives, and so both issues would prompt the supposed exodus of the branch employees at that Greenfield branch.
But Your Honor, the branch employees, they talked to them, every single one of them. The people involved here, Ms. Mesa, Ms. Weller, Ms. Overmeyer, Ms. Fockfum, none of them were wanting to leave because of Ms. Lucas. They all, the three CSRs that I mentioned, Weller, Mesa, and Fockfum, all had problems with Jessica Overmeyer. That's the person they had problems with. It was her behavior that was really at issue here, not Lucas's. And the fact that operations knowledge, in and of itself, every step of the way, Ms. Murphy minimized the importance of operations knowledge. Every conversation that Lucas had about this issue, because Ms. Lucas was very committed to learning the job, she knew that she didn't have all the knowledge it took as far as operations.
Did she ever become proficient in the operations side of banking?
Yes. by...
Where will we see that?
Well, by June of 04, Judge Rovner, it's Ms. Lucas's testimony in her affidavit that she became over 90% proficient in operations knowledge.
What does that mean?
Meaning she knew 90% of the operations, the issues involving the operations of the bank.
Doesn't sound like she's competent.
Well,
if after some time on the job you know only 90% of what's necessary to do the job, seems to me there's a big problem.
But Judge Ripple, the fact that it's undisputed in the record that the company would never have taken this action, would never have removed her from her job under escort of security from the position, from the location, had it just been operations knowledge being the problem. There's no dispute about that. They don't raise that issue. They don't argue that point. They don't say she would have been removed or terminated just simply because of operations knowledge, because her primary function was to sell the products of the bank and to manage the people. Those were the two primary functions of the BEO position. And even Karen Murphy stated that to Ms. Lucas time and time again when she was interviewed and during the course of her employment. Operations knowledge and the operational functions of the bank was primarily the function of the assistant manager, not the BEO of the bank. As far as Ms. Murphy's statement that she believed, she came to the conclusion that Lucas's behavior was the root cause of what she believed to be an impending mass exodus. Again, not one of Lucas's employees said that about Lucas, that her behavior was a problem. And again, the termination paperwork says something entirely different. Now, apparently realizing they didn't have enough to terminate for this reason, the operations knowledge, during the course of litigation, they created this additional reason. The fact that her behavior, according to Murphy, was the root cause. I mean, that seems pretty clear. She doesn't even mention operations knowledge. She says in her affidavit in this litigation that her behavior was the root cause of this impending mass exodus. They're relying on that issue, and there's no evidence of that whatsoever in the record.
You know, even if she did have evidence, which it would seem she did, suggesting that Overmyer and not she was the problem at the Greenfield branch, wouldn't the decision to move her to the floating BEO trainee position simply be bad business judgment? I mean, couldn't it be viewed that way?
Well, quite frankly, Your Honor, given the circumstances about, you know, the fact that Monica Baker, this is the senior VP of HR, who really should know better, is willing to terminate. She wants to terminate right then and there. She doesn't want to keep Ms. Lucas. She wants to terminate right then and there without any discipline in the file on Ms. Lucas, with having achieved, and this is another issue that's undisputed, and they don't even address in their brief at all, the fact that the Greenfield branch that Ms. Lucas ran was number one in sales, number one in customer service at the time she was removed.
See, to me, that's sort of an apples and oranges argument. Because what does it matter if you're number one, if everyone under you is so miserable that they're exiting? I mean, you know, so what if you're number one, if, you know, people are shaking and trembling and miserable? And
Your Honor, I would absolutely agree. If there was evidence in the record to support that, that they were miserable because of Ms. Lucas. That's just not the case here. There's no evidence of that whatsoever. None. If they were miserable at all, they were miserable because of Ms. Overmyer, not Ms. Lucas. So I would agree with you wholeheartedly, Judge Rovner, but that's just not what the record shows here.
Well, but see, they credited Overmeyer's explanation for her bad behavior, which was that she had too much work to do because she had to do both her job and Lucas's. And maybe that was a bad business judgment, as I, you know, said earlier. But it's a judgment. And when you get down to the ultimate termination, I guess it's Walkowiak. His negative review that would provide the legitimate reason for firing her.
Well, Judge Rovner, we believe the process really started with removal. That was designed. Keep in mind, she was escorted with her box of stuff that she was asked to clean out her desk, in her box, you know, walking out with her box of stuff through her office, and security escort. Those circumstances, I think, are plainly clear.
Well, is she arguing that her move to the BEO trainee position was retaliatory?
Yes.
But at that point, she hadn't even filed either of her complaints.
Well, the ERD or the charge of discrimination, no, that had not been filed. But as far as ERISA retaliation and as far as FMLA violations, those certainly are at issue
Now that's what I started out with, because that's what I don't understand. What action did they take to deprive Lucas of ERISA benefits? She'd already dropped out of the plan when she was fired. Terminating her didn't affect her benefits, right?
But the definition of participant under the statute says that it's one who is either enrolled in the plan or one who can become eligible to enroll. That's the definition of participant. She clearly satisfied the second of those two, even though she had already withdrawn from the plan. She could freely go back into the plan. That's not disputed in this case whatsoever. I think time and time again, this court, the Seventh Circuit, has said evidence of pretext, if there is a departure from the original documentation and that the defendant changes his story during the course of litigation and from the time of the events and what's reflected in contemporaneous documents, that a jury could reasonably conclude that the after the fact justification was a pretext. Time and time again, that alone is sufficient to deny summary judgment. The latest case being Pandocha versus American MTN Bearing, 2007. That in and of itself, the fact that Karen Murphy trumped up, added to the reason for Ms. Lucas's removal and focused on her behavior is clearly enough evidence of pretext to deny summary judgment in and of itself. And then you look at all the other circumstances, the comments by Ms. Murphy, the fact that the branch was number one in sales and customer service, the fact that she, Ms. Lucas, had the highest medical costs of any employee, and the fact that the person involved in this decision, Monica Baker, was the person that, on a weekly basis, she demanded to know the medical costs of each employee.
I've asked you so many questions that you're way into your
reading. I understand, Your Honor.
Sorry.
Why don't I just reserve the rest of the time for rebuttal? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. LaPointe. Ms. Ford.
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Michelle Ford, and I'm here on behalf of the Appalachian Pyramex Bank. And I'd like to address first, before we start talking about the law, some of the questions that Judge Rogram raised, which I think need addressing only because the record is actually not has not been accurately depicted. First of all, Lucas testified that she withdrew from the Puramax plan because she had a side business that was incorporated, and her accountant advised her that it would be less expensive for her to take her own insurance. And I elicited that deposition testimony from her myself. As for the conflicting reasons, I'd like to address that when I talk about pretext, but I do want to address the issue of whether or not she was ever determined to be proficient in operational side of the bank. And we all know, I think, based upon the reading of the brief, that she was expected to both bring the bank money in, open up checking accounts, encourage investments, do advanced consumer lending, and she was indeed very good at that. But as a branch executive officer, her expectations, her employer's legitimate expectations, included much more than that. She was to manage her employees, and she was to be able to, she was expected to be able to know the operational sides and to also be present more than 20 hours a week. Incidentally, that is actually undisputed.
Was she the most senior employee at that branch?
Indeed, she was, although I have to say that that branch also housed the headquarters. So, of course, Monica Baker was officed, and she was able to personally observe Geraldine Lucas's behavior. So she saw herself the way in which staff avoided her, and Lucas closeted herself up and simply would not make herself available to staff. If you don't know how to run a cash machine, if you don't know how to make change, if you don't know how to balance the bank, the bank's ledgers at the end of the day, how are you going to be able to answer your own employees' questions? So her, the only evidence in the record is of her proficiency is based upon her own affidavit, and this court has held over and over again that an employee's assessment of their own ability to do the essential functions of their job in a proficient manner is immaterial. It's what the employer believes.
Does the record indicate who hired her originally?
Ms. Baker hired her. She was considered to be the third best of three candidates. And Ms. Baker ultimately hired her. Ms. Baker, incidentally, also, on the advice of Denise Walkowiak, was the only one that made the decision to terminate her. All of the alleged discriminatory statements that are in the record are attributed to Karen Murphy, who did not participate in the termination decision in any way, and that is undisputed. And as for the removal of her from the branch executive officer position to a floating trainee position, Ms. Baker wanted to terminate her at that point because three employees were about to leave her branch, and ultimately they traced the problems to her. And
do you have any concrete examples for what was referred to as her surliness? Because if you look at the affidavits of Saccone Pacafume, Ashley Weller, Shannon Mays, it sounds as if Jessica Overmeyer treated the customer service representatives harshly. But what evidence was there against Ms. Lucas?
I'll quote on page 20 from John Doerr's testimony. I asked him, you testified earlier about comments and problems that Ms. Lucas had with teller training. He said yes. I asked him, do you recall specific the nature of the comments that were made? And his answer was just morale, generally, that they were not happy with. If they had a problem, they had no one to go to. And I said, the tellers, you mean? And he said, yes. I said, how frequently did you hear these complaints? And he said, I think I heard it twice. In addition, we have the paperclip incident, which is not denied, in which Ms. Lucas, in a fit of pique after being corrected by Ms. Murphy, threw a paperclip across the desk in Ms. Murphy's direction and said, nothing like being blindsided. And this is the kind of conduct. I think an essential function of everybody's job is to be able to get along in a civil and a well-behaved manner with their co-employees.
Well, the whole place sounds like nobody was getting along, so I mean, the whole place sounds Like, we wouldn't want to work there.
Judge, actually, no one wanted to work at the Greenfield branch when Ms. Lucas was the branch executive officer, and people were looking to move. Now, when they did take her out of that position, Ms. Fak-Foom rescinded her resignation and stayed on at the Greenfield branch.
But she had all these terrible reports about her previously.
Exactly, and this became the question. Ms. Baker had to ask herself.
I mean, before Ms. Lucas got there.
Ms. Overmeyer?
No.
Oh, Ms. Fak-Foom.
Ms. Fak-Foom.
Right, but it was also Ms. Fak-Foom, Ms. Weller, Ms. Meza, who were interviewed and ultimately discovered that what they were confused about was that Jessica Overmeyer's performance at another branch was impeccable before she started getting complaints at the Greenfield branch. And so Ms. Murphy and Ms. Baker interviewed these employees, and they asked specifically about Ms. Lucas, and you can read their affidavits, and they explain in detail why they had problems with Ms. Lucas, her unavailability, her absolute lack of knowledge of operations, her habit of closeting herself in the office and not answering questions. So that's that's in the record, and that's undisputed. What's also undisputed is that Ms. Lucas worked 20 hours a week. Ms. Walkowiak submitted an affidavit in which she indicated that Ms. Lucas told her that that's all that Ms. Lucas needed to perform her job. So what Ms. Lucas effectively did was she shifted her job responsibilities, her half-time job responsibilities, onto Ms. Overmeyer. Ms. Overmeyer became stressed, overburdened, and became herself a poor manager, and that was what was ultimately discovered. Now, Puramax Bank, Monica Baker, doesn't have to be right about that, but we have a lot of these allusions to the fact that, yes, she was on intermittent FMLA leave, and yes, she was a member of an ERISA plan, and yes, she is female. No, she was never pregnant. But there is no evidence connecting any of these facts to any of the alleged adverse employment decisions made, if you can even characterize the lateral transfer with no loss of pay or benefits as an adverse employment action, which in and of itself is a problem that fails the prima facie case, at least with respect to Title VII.
Oh, my goodness, that floating BEO trainee position surely was a demotion. I mean, not only did her job description take a turn for the worse, she's no longer eligible for incentive pay, she loses her loan authority, she loses her telephone, she loses her desk, she loses her office. I mean, that is surely a material change.
I make this argument because, Judge Rovner, this court has, I think, made several pronouncements on the issue of whether or not an adverse employment action can actually be found in a prima facie case under Title VII, for example, or wherever else the McDonnell-Douglas burden-shifting test applies, if the lateral transfer does not result in any monetary disadvantage.
Well,
and I'm going to just acknowledge the fact that Seventh Circuit authority on this matter is at least allows me to make the argument that that's a possible conclusion this court can draw. But the question is, why was she moved? It was not because of retaliation, because she was moved on July 18th of 2004, and she didn't file her discrimination complaint until July of 2004. So in order for her employer to have removed her because of retaliation for filing a discrimination complaint would essentially require proof that her employer was prescient.
What evidence is there that she actually performed poorly while she was in the floating position, that floating trainee position? Because according to Lucas, all of her reviews were positive, with the exception of Walkowiak's inexplicably harsh review, which did not actually relate to performance, did it?
Judge Rovner, in the end, the reason Ms. Lucas was terminated was because she could not be placed in any branch. Ms. Murphy had a conversation with Ms. Merkel, who said that Ms. Merkel indicated that she would not be a good fit for a position that Ms. Merkel had open because of her inability to get along with others, her harsh demeanor. And I would direct the court to my brief on pages 28 to 29. So Ms. Wolkowiak was not the only one who believed that Ms. Lucas could not perform the essential functions of her job, that she gossiped. She did not present herself as a leader. She lowered herself to the level of the department employees. She repeatedly complained to members of the data staff about her experience.
What does lowering yourself to the level of departmental employees mean?
Well, one would expect that if you were a member of management, you would be able to separate yourself to the extent that you would be able to adequately discipline employees if necessary. The specific quote that Ms. Merkel made was specific to gossip. She engaged in gossip. Now, Ms. Wolkowiak, you know what she said about her. Dirk Helfrich, a former floating assistant branch manager, testified, and I asked him, do you have any questions about Jerry Lucas's fundamental competence to do her job? And his answer was yes. The long and the short of it is we have affidavits and testimony. And for Ms. Lucas to establish her effectively what is a conspiracy theory on some sort of free-floating discriminatory intent, that's not reflected by any direct evidence or indirect evidence, because I agree with you, Judge, with the court, Judge Rovner, that evidence of pretext, it has not been established here because the same reasons were given at all times. But Ms. Lucas would have to ask this court to take on pure faith the idea that Ms. Baker, Karen Murphy, Denise Wolkowiak, Jessica Obermeyer, John Doerr, Mr. Helfrich, Denise Merkel, Ms. Fackfum, Ms. Meza, and Ms. Weller all conspired to make contemporaneous complaints about Lucas's poor management skills, her frequent absences from the branch, which Ms. Lucas herself does not dispute, and her lack of knowledge of basic operating skills. These reasons remain undisputed.
Well, was she frequently gone over and beyond the time she took his FMLA leave?
I beg your pardon?
Was she frequently gone beyond the time that she took as FMLA leave? In other words, did she use flex time such that she wasn't in the office during business hours?
Judge, you make a good point, because Karen Murphy never complained about Ms. Lucas's use of FMLA leave or protected leave. What she had a problem with was her unexcused absences as reflected in her 20-hour work week. And that in the record, you will find the court will find that the only complaints that were made about her absences were made about her absences from the branch when she had no excuse whatsoever, her unexplained absences. Now, as far as addressing other questions that were asked, the focus has been made of the issue of pretext, but before the court can reach the issue of pretext, the court has to determine if Ms. Lucas has shown that her own employer believed that she was employing the essential functions of her job up to her own employer's expectations. And this she has failed to do. Rather than cut to the chase or rather than actually meet the evidentiary burdens, which I can tell the court were not met in this case, because, for example, in ERISA, under the ERISA, to prove a violation as to termination, Plaintiffs must establish more than a loss of benefits. They must demonstrate that their employers terminated them with the specific intent of preventing them or retaliating against them for the use of benefits. There's no evidence of that.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. LaPointe, you have about 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just to address some of the several of the issues that were brought up. Judge Rovner, you asked about examples of surly behavior by Ms. Lucas, and the response was John Doerr talked about poor morale because they on two occasions they came to me about some operational issues. Is that evidence of surly behavior? No. She also talked about a paperclip incident. Is that evidence of surly behavior with her employees? No. There's no evidence of surly behavior. There's no evidence of poor behavior whatsoever in the record. None, none, none. The fact, what was mentioned earlier is that, Judge Rovner, you mentioned it seemed like no one wanted. Thank you, Your Honor.
The case will be taken under advisement.